Welcome to the Big Ask podcast, giving you inspiration and permission to make your big ask so you can design the life you want to live. Whether you are an entrepreneur hungry for revenue generating best practices or an individual restless to make a significant change, the life you want to live could be just one big ask away. Get ready to be entertained by real life stories, no filter conversations, and inspired by the daily hustle. And now, here is your host, entrepreneur, and author of Permission, Stop Competing, and Start Creating the Life You Want to Live, Nicole Matthews.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Big Ask Podcast. My name is Nicole Matthews, and we are in for an amazing treat today. I have the great honor of sitting across the table from Jeremy McGee, athlete, speaker, and managing director of the Unpavement Tour.
Tour, project, all the above.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, for being here. It's such a thrill, and we have a lot to talk about. So give us just a little bit about your backstory so that our listeners are caught up with who you are.
Well, I guess the elephant in the room normally is that I'm in a wheelchair. I'm a paraplegic, and I was paralyzed in a motorcycle accident in 2001.
Okay.
So that's the main thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. Get that out of the way.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about that accident. So here in San Diego...
Yep. Here in San Diego, I was living in Point Loma at the time and just running errands on my motorcycle. And I think I was, you know, maybe five, six blocks from my apartment at the time. And a lady just made a quick left turn in front of me.
What do you remember about that day?
I remember everything. I did not hit my head, so I was completely awake and aware. Immediately... I knew I was paralyzed immediately because I couldn't move my legs or feel my lower body. Mm-hmm. That was obviously the first thing. And then it was really difficult to breathe. It was really painful every breath. So I knew I had broken some ribs. Turns out I had broken like 10 or 11 of them. Okay. And I tasted blood in my mouth. And so I knew, now I was a lifeguard at the time, so I was very familiar with assessing injuries in an emergency situation. So I was just practically applying that knowledge to myself, one by one, going down the list. I tasted blood in my mouth, so I knew those broken ribs had punctured my lungs. And then what I felt told me that things were very serious. I felt my hands and my face getting cold really fast. I was losing... feeling my hands, they were starting to go numb, and I was getting really, really tired. I just wanted to fall asleep, so I knew I was bleeding, either internally or from where I could no longer feel. So it was a dire situation, and I understood that. Just so happens that there were paramedics across the street at a Los Panchos taco shop. How long does it take you to throw down your tacos and run across the street?
Yeah.
Seconds. Wow. So my little moment in the street there, although it seemed like an eternity, was really short, only a handful of seconds. They were on me. They had me backboarded and in the ambulance really fast. And they said I was in surgery in 22 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
From the time they responded. So they saved my life.
Amazing. So you wake up out of surgery. The reality of your situation is upon you. What is thoughts going through your head at that point?
So many thoughts. Mostly just... pain.
Okay.
Lots of pain. I woke up in the MRI tube. That's the first thing I remember after that. And a voice came over the speaker and just said, "Hey, look, before we do anything, before I ask you any questions, before we start assessing the situation, just know that you're lucky to be alive. Those paramedics save you." So I took a deep breath and just thankfulness rushed in. Okay, I'm alive. Now we got to figure this out. And then they started asking me the questions one by one. Can you feel your toes? No. And then they gave me the rundown of what all my injuries were.
Okay. Okay. So how long were you in the hospital for?
Not very long, only 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, I bounced back fast from that one.
From that one.
Well, there's been many, many, many since.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah. We'll have to get into that as well. So, okay. So you're now at home 6 weeks later. And where were you headed in your life? What were you studying in school? Were you in school at the time?
No, I was out of school. I was 25 at the time.
Okay.
And I was lifeguarding. I was teaching snowboarding in the winters, mm-hmm. waiting tables, having a blast.
Living the Southern California life.
Living the SoCal life.
Yeah, definitely,
yep.
Definitely. So now we have this new reality, right? So how do you go from that moment of sort of everything's changed to it's okay, I can figure this out?
I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, in the beginning, yes, it was super intense. I had dark nights alone in the hospital, mm-hmm. at home too. It just wondering why this all happened. Super angry, not wanting to go on. Mm-hmm. And those moments over time, as I faced loss, you know, it became less intense and less frequent. Mm-hmm. But man, I still have my days.
Yeah,
you know, living life in a wheelchair is not all fun and games. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And I get tired of the struggle even
sure.
today, even yeah. how many years later? 2001, was it 16, 17 years?
17 years.
September will be 17 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So then you decide, you know what, I'm going to go climb a mountain. I know that there's some years there in probably in between, right? Between
yeah.
our new reality and then the mountain.
Yes, the expedition to which you refer was in 2012.
Okay.
So, you know, 11 years later.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
10 and a half. And you know, it's funny that you say, I made a decision, I'm going to climb this mountain, because that's actually kind of how it happened.
Yeah.
I just said, hey, I'm going to go climb that mountain.
Yeah, yeah. So we got a lot of to dive into there. But first I want to just make sure that I'm being sensitive to, how do you like to be referred? Is paraplegic right? I feel like disabled is not appropriate for you because everything I've seen is completely abled. But what's the right way? How do you like to be referred to?
Dude.
Dude.
Hey,
love
dude.
It.
I'm
dude.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always use the word handyman.
Handyman.
I
love it.
Adaptive athlete.
Okay.
You know, disabled. Is probably the politically correct term maybe these days. That's what
yeah.
people use. I, you know, I don't really know. I don't really think about it.
Yeah.
However you feel comfortable.
Yeah. Okay.
It's still okay with me.
Yeah. No, that's why I wanted to ask, because disabled does not feel at all appropriate
yeah.
for you. So
that that's funny.
Just, but, you know, I think in a world where we all are trying to be politically correct, maybe we've gone too far. I don't know. But, you know, I just wanted to honor at least how, you know, you were comfortable being.
I want to find the most awkward and longest phrase possible to refer to me and make you say that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I love it. I love it.
Like
love it.
More differently abled person wheelchair user is what yeah. I'd like to be on. I don't
okay.
know.
So I know you grew up surfing. I know you grew up snowboarding. When was the first time you were able to do those things after your accident?
Pretty much right away.
Interesting.
If I would have known then what I know now about back surgery, I would not have gone skiing immediately coming out of the hospital.
Probably not wise.
It's funny. Nobody told me. I guess maybe because it's common knowledge. I don't know. Something you should know, that if you have back surgery, that you should not go skiing right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I met this homeless guy on the street in Mission Beach. He asked me, I was just, you know, going for a walk,
yeah.
you know, pushing my wheelchair down the boardwalk, just getting outside.
Mm-hmm.
And now this was a 75-pound hospital wheelchair I was in.
Okay.
And this homeless guy asked me, hey, do you drive? And I'm like, no, I need to get hand controls for my 4Runner. And he's like, hey, I've got some for you. I'm like, really? How much? He said, $150. So I went to the ATM, got money out, gave it to this homeless guy. He looked homeless anyways, and he gave me a set of hand controls, like a temporary
okay.
set you can throw in any car, and I threw up my 4Runner and drove to Colorado and went skiing. All my ribs broken.
Oh my word. I don't know what's scarier, the fact that you buy it from a homeless guy or you're like driving to Colorado, right?
Yeah, and it was a beautiful trip. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of a rite of passage for me.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it pouring rain and I was listening to sad indie music and it felt good to be out there.
That's amazing. So kind of the first time you probably felt connected again and being able to do things that you did previously.
Connected. I don't know if I ever felt disconnected.
Okay.
But no, I wasn't going to stop being me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we're skiing in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have an adaptive ski.
Yep.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. And obviously you've never been on one of those before.
Nope.
Okay. So what's that process like?
Oh man. Imagine being, a semi-pro competitive snowboard instructor, mm-hmm. and then you're attached to a big metal thing all of a sudden with six people helping you down the bunny slope.
Right.
Humbling.
Yeah.
Big piece of humble pie.
Okay.
And it was super hard. I'm one of those people that I have to work really hard to be good at something. Mm-hmm. I hate those people that are just good at everything. And it takes me a long time. It took me a long time to figure it out and pick it up. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely worth the effort.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of disabled people saying, I'm not gonna ski again unless I could do it normally or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, I get that. Yeah. I'd rather be stand-up skiing too, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
Still feels good.
Good.
It's the learning curve's longer. There's expensive equipment involved. There's a lot of work involved, but still feels good.
Yeah.
Still fun.
Who was your support system around you during all this time?
Okay. Yeah. I'm not really close to my family. Love them. Beautiful people, but totally different and, not really that close with them. I had tons of friends from college that I'm really close with, mm-hmm. that were there for me, mm-hmm. emotionally, spiritually. But when it came down to it, to figure things out, no one knew what to do. Mm. None of us had been through this before.
Sure.
And, ultimately with anything it comes down to us, mm-hmm. and the decisions that we make to make those steps that we need to make all comes from within.
Yeah.
So ultimately, this is just my philosophy on life. We're alone in everything we do, whether we're in a dark cave, just us, or surrounded by people that love us, we're still alone in those decisions, mm-hmm. and in the ability to take the initiative. And so that's why I answer the question. Like it was up to me.
Yeah. That's great. So in your TED talk, which is phenomenal, I absolutely recommend that everybody watches it, and they can find that on your website. But in your TED talk, one of the things you said literally stopped me when I was listening to it. And you said, I just didn't want to be left behind. And for me, I felt that way immediately about my business and about not being as capable in my business or as successful in my business because I was allowing myself to be left behind. And so I know your comment was obviously related to your physical abilities, but for me, it was interesting that I immediately took that to I don't want to be left behind in business either. And I could definitely apply it to other areas of my life. But for me, that was my initial comment was about being left behind in business. It was such a powerful statement. So talk a little bit about, let's move into how you weren't left behind. So you decide you want to climb this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So why that particular mountain, which is in Mammoth, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so why that particular mountain?
Well, it's a special mountain.
Okay.
Because it holds snow all year round. Even on bad snow years, it still has snow on it. And my friends would climb and ski this thing every spring and summer. And I just wanted to be with them. I felt left behind.
Yeah.
And it was just this borderline obsession, this feeling of not being okay with being left behind. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we have to figure this out, you guys. We got to get me out there because I can't sit here with this feeling.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so we all agree this is a good idea. What's our first step? I know there was some engineering that needed to take place in order for this to happen. So let's walk through that.
Yeah, you know, I could never go into detail of, you know, everything that went into mm-hmm. it. There was so much work, like down to the craziest details. But the first step was finding people to help me get out there. That was step one. Okay. So I made a poster saying, hey, I want to climb this mountain. Will you help me?
Is this a big ask?
This is a big ask.
Okay.
Yeah. And I even had little tear-off strips with my phone number at the bottom of the poster. And oh, I put it up in the ski patrol room in Mammoth.
Okay.
And I got a phone call.
Interesting.
From Jeff Fox. If you go on my Instagram... a lot of my like really cool photos are taken by Fox on a Rock, at Fox on a Rock. He's an amazing photographer, amazing outdoorsman, beautiful man. He calls me. He's like, hey man, I'll help you get up this mountain.
Amazing.
He's an amazing climber too.
Okay.
But it turned out that he actually was unable to go. He had a last minute trip to Israel that he had to go on. But he found the climbers. He made the connections and took the effort to connect me to the guys, Charlie Barrett and Matt Waugh, some of the best climbers on the east side. That's what you call the Eastern Sierras on the east side of Yosemite, in that area. And those guys got me up there with a crew of other people too.
So from the minute you decide that this is what's going to happen to when you actually start climbing, what is that length of time?
I want to say about 3 months.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Does that sound short or long?
No, that seems short to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we are determined to make this happen. So I got Mammoth Mountain to donate some accommodations for me. And I stayed there. I went to Mammoth for 3 months. And every day we went out on the mountain, out on the ski resort. Mm-hmm. Ski patrol blocked off an area for us to train and practice. And we tried our ideas every day mm-hmm. until we came up with something that worked.
And how far are you actually going from bottom to top of this mountain? Like, what's the
3,000 vertical feet.
Okay.
Which is the same distance as what El Cap is in Yosemite, mm-hmm. which is a big wall climb. Yeah.
And on average, how fast would people climb that?
I'm not sure. I think like 2 days usually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you?
6.5 hours. Now, this is totally different, though. It was low angle on snow. So, you know, there's a lot of friction involved, and it's, you know, not vertical. Also, I also had a belay assist, though. There's no way I was going to be able to do this. We found out pretty quickly in our training that I wasn't going to be able to do this completely under my own power, mm-hmm. that I was going to have, you know, basically the climber guys leaned back against the belay rope. So their weight was assisting me as I did pull-ups up the mountain.
Got it. Okay. And so 6.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
What, you are 5 minutes into this. What now? What are you thinking?
The analogy I always use that you hear every day is, you know, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that. It was all I could do. Just focus on one pull-up at a time, and then pass that, you know, one rope length at a time. So I would just stare at the next rope anchor, mm-hmm. and just crank pull-ups till I got to it.
Okay. Was there ever a time you said, I can't do this anymore?
Yes.
And
beginning.
Okay.
I said that. I was like, there's no way this is possible. Looking at this mountain from the bottom and feeling physically the way I felt. I didn't sleep. You know, we camped at 10,000 feet. I was cold and tired. I barely slept. I didn't eat. I was too nervous to eat. Mm-hmm. I drank a Rockstar and had a packet of almond butter in the morning. That's it, man. That's it.
Yikes.
But about 2/3 of the way up, my body shut down. I have an old nerve injury from playing football and in high school in my left shoulder. And so my left arm was locking up. It was super painful. And my left arm wasn't really working anymore. and I ran out of water. I was dehydrated, and I was thrown in the towel.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what did you have to say to yourself, or what did your team say to you to keep you going?
That's a moment that I can't really explain, that I don't understand fully as a human being. There was a crew that had hiked up a separate route up the ridgeline that carried, you know, my sit ski and, mm-hmm. and gear. And they were at the top waiting for us. And they were hollering down when they got there. And I don't know what it was. Just hearing their voices, you know, my body was done. Mm-hmm. But I was able to go on. And I can't really explain that. There was and something inside of me, which I believe is inside all of us, I'm assuming, I can only assume that, mm-hmm. That was past physical possibility.
Yeah, amazing. So I think it's important we note also that you were not only climbing to the top, but then you're going to ski back down. So it's not like you climb to the top and you have a comfy little truck that you're getting into or a helicopter. So now once you get to the top, I know you were dying to eat your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right?
Yes, that was the peanut butter and jelly sandwich was the symbol of this whole thing.
Okay.
Because my friends told me stories of having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich picnic at the top and soaking in the views together.
Okay.
And I was like, I just want to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at the top of this mountain with my friends. And that became the symbol.
It never probably tasted so good, right?
It was so good because I hadn't eaten anything. I was exhausted. It was mashed and smushed and gooey, but it tasted really good.
I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. So how long are you at the top enjoying the view before you actually take the ski back?
Maybe 30 minutes because we were well past our hard turnaround time. Oh, we were past that.
Okay.
And we couldn't be out there too late because when the sun goes down in the Eastern Sierras, shit gets real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned something in your TED talk about I was afraid to freeze. Did you mean temperature wise or just like physically, emotionally,
physically,
mentally?
Emotionally. Mm-hmm. That was part of my, I'd say, mental training for mm-hmm. this. Now I'm not, I would never call myself an expert skier. And at the time I was not good enough to ski this thing. And it was haunting me in my dreams, I'm telling you. And remember what I said about I have to work really hard to make it anything?
Yeah.
So, and when I, have you ever stood do you ski?
I have skied, yes, growing up I skied.
Have you stood at the top of the mountain and you look at it
uh-huh.
and you just freeze in fear?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I was afraid of, because that's what I do. I look at it and I'm going, and I just, I can't move.
Yeah.
And so my training leading up to that 3 months I was in Mammoth, I was on first chair every morning and I go straight to the top of the mountain and my rule and direct right to the hardest run, the most difficult terrain, rocky, bumpy, steep, and then strap a big metal thing to you. It's really difficult. My rule was that I couldn't stop at the top, that I had to just drop in and ski it and let mm-hmm. Let my kinesthetic awareness just take over.
Yeah.
So that was my training. My rule for myself is I couldn't stop and look at it.
Right.
So that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
When I was up there, that I was just going to freeze and everyone's going to be telling me go, go, go. And I'm not going to be able to.
Right. Mm-hmm. It is. That has happened to me. I have frozen at the top of a mountain and was on a mountain that was probably a bit over my head, but sort of peer pressure got me to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably about 20 yards, maybe down the mountain, and that's when I froze. Not from the top.
Oh, interesting.
But and literally, if you would have said to me, "How do you ski?" I would have no idea how to answer that question right then. It was like I literally disconnected my mind and my body. I mean, I knew exactly what to do, but for whatever reason, my mind was like, "Nope, not today. We're not doing that." And it took a lot of navigating for me to get down that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting how you do have those moments of, I know what to do, but I can't go. So that's why I love how you use the term drop in, because it's so apropos to skiing or life or just sort of probably the wave when you're surfing or anything. I think it's a really, really, really beautiful analogy. So let's talk a little bit about other projects that you're working on. Oh, wait, first of all, we get you down the mountain. Let's just close the loop on that. So you eat your peanut butter and jelly. You finally get in onto your ski and you get down. And we got down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much one turn at a time with a safety rope attached.
Okay.
Got down. Yeah.
So what's the celebration like at the end when you know you're just...
Celebration came the next day because I ended up in the hospital that night with on an IV with dehydration, exhaustion. Oh, yeah. The celebration was a little delayed.
Yeah, a little delayed. But in the end, that's... Yeah, it must have been so sweet.
Absolutely. Everybody came over to where I was staying the next day, and we reminisced. Yeah, it was good.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about other projects you're working on at the moment. Let's talk a little bit about Unpavement and what your goal is with that.
Well, I have this really cool mountain bike. I don't know if you saw photos.
I did.
The green machine.
Yes.
Full suspension, off-road, hand cycle. This thing can jump off rocks.
Amazing.
Now, I'm not a mountain biker. I am by default, but not at heart.
Interesting.
I'm a runner. I want to be just running. If I wasn't, I would say, if I wasn't in a wheelchair, I would be running barefoot through the jungle, just wearing my trunks with a knife on my hip. And so this bike is how I do that, you know?
Yeah.
This is how I get off the pavement. And this, people living in wheelchairs are kind of relegated to life on the pavement. And the Unpavement project is the unpavement of these people's lives, of my life, getting us out on the trail, seeing things that we never would be able to, going places we wouldn't be able to without a cool apparatus like this.
Did you help design that bike?
No. The manufacturer's in Poland.
Okay.
I'm one U.S. dealer and working on taking over U.S. distribution for these bikes so that we can bring the cost down and get them to more people. This bike is super cool. It can jump off rocks, but it's also how I'm going to go for a hike and go for a trail run too. As cool as this bike is, it's limited. It's big, you know, and can't go everywhere. And I've gotten stuck. Imagine how stuck I would have to be, or you would have to be, whatever, to call 911 and get helicoptered out somewhere.
Oh my gosh. Okay. There's a story there. Let's go there. Let's go there.
I was in my backyard in PQ Canyon.
Okay.
Where I ride every week, and I ended up going down this exploring down this trail, which turned into a no trail. I end up off my bike in a creek bed underneath the bushes, dragging my bike through the bushes for probably close to 2 hours. It was 94 degrees.
Oh my God.
I'm scared of rattlesnakes, everything, you know? And I, you know, I get through the whole process. I get back on my bike, fall back off, get back on, fall back off. And I end up upside down in a cactus full of black widows, with a broken chain. And I was like, okay, this I need to throw in the towel on this extreme effort right now.
Right.
So to avoid situations like this, and, you know, and in my travels too, I travel a lot for speaking and I bring my bike with me and I want to ride, but I don't know where I can ride safely, you know? And a lot of times I'm just like going for it or asking tons of people that for information that they don't know. So part of the Unpavement project is collecting information, trail information for adaptive riders. And I'm doing that through Trail Forks, which is owned by Pink Bike. And Pink Bike is huge. Pink Bike to mountain bikers is like Facebook to the world. Okay. If you're a mountain biker, you have a Pink Bike profile.
Got it.
It's huge.
Okay.
And so they started their trails project called Trail Forks. And if you go on there as a mountain biker and use the app, you can, there's check boxes. You can check, you know, this is the type of bike I have. This is the kind of trails I want to ride. And it shows you what trails those are in that area. Well, now adaptive mountain bike is one of those options. Mm-hmm. And so I basically am riding everywhere and using my YouTube channel to provide uncut video of trails for adaptive riders. Because that's really the best information you can have is actually be able to see the trail first time for first person point of view. And so I'm videoing trails and collecting information so that adaptive riders can use the Trail Forks app just like anybody else and know what they're getting into.
That's amazing. What's the percentage of adaptive riders, do you think? Do you know?
That's a great question. No, yeah. I don't know, but I know that number is growing.
Yeah.
With our efforts in the Middle East, with the way adaptive sports are getting crazier and crazier, with the baby boomer generation, you know, kind of aging into wheelchairs now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more people with disabilities every year.
Yeah.
And now we have the technology to get them out on the trail.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So have you pretty much taken San Diego? You've mapped San Diego already?
Oh my God.
No.
There's so many trails.
Yeah.
One trail at a time.
One trail at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
Good and motto then, of the life, right?
Eat the elephant one bite at a time, and in 10 years, we'll see where we're at, you know?
Yeah. Amazing. That is really amazing. Absolutely amazing. Another quote I love that you say is, whether or not you live an inspired life is determined by how uncomfortable you are willing to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And I know you do a presentation about being uncomfortable. So let's talk a little bit about how uncomfortable you're willing to get. What in your life right now do you still need to get uncomfortable with?
Oh man, so many things. Mm. Well, every day that I throw myself out there in the waves on the trail, it's scary, mm-hmm. you know? I'm definitely uncomfortable there. But I think just right now where I'm at in my life, just growing as a man, mm-hmm. you know, and facing the things about myself that I don't like, that I'm embarrassed about or whatever, that I don't share mm-hmm. with people, facing those things is probably the most important thing I can do while I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. What has been one of your big asks through this whole journey for you?
What has been or what is what has right been. Now?
No, what has, let's deal with what has been first.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm just forced to ask. I'm in a situation where I need help, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens all the time. It's a tough pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. And it is another big piece of humble pie to have to ask a stranger mm-hmm. to help me in a situation where I'm stuck or whatever. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. Mm-hmm.
What can people who don't live their lives in a wheelchair understand? What can we do better?
Oh, man.
What do we need to pay attention to more?
That's a great question because everybody is so different. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to reach in and help a guy like me and I'm like, sure, yeah, awesome. I could totally need help or, you know, it also depends what on the day for me too. Sure. Another day I could be like, don't touch me. You know, right. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a really tough one. Cause everybody's so different and, it'd be tough to be you in that situation. How do I navigate this? Cause everybody is so different. Man, just be kind.
Just be kind. Yeah.
That's all we can default to, mm-hmm. you know? Because you could be pissing somebody off and you could not be, who knows, but your heart's in the right place, then you're all right, I feel.
Yeah. So now you do a lot of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about the message that comes out of your presentations.
Well, you touched on it a couple of minutes ago. I firmly believe, and it's not something we don't already know. That's mm-hmm. the thing. I don't know something you don't know. Right. I'm just kind of sharing it maybe in a different light mm-hmm. or just giving a reminder, you know, that the most important things in this life are to enjoy it mm-hmm. because it's short and it could all end on the way home
mm-hmm.
and to grow as a human, grow as a person. And whether we get to those, whether we do those two things or not, whether we get to the things on our bucket list and whether we really grow as a person is all contingent upon the answer to the question, how uncomfortable are you willing to get?
Yeah.
How deep in the muck are you willing to dig? Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. So what kind of audiences is your message resonating with? Who are you speaking in front of these days?
You know, I never thought I would be a corporate speaker, but I guess that's what I am now. I don't consider myself a speaker by any means. I'm getting up there and I'm like, you know, fumbling over my words, totally unpolished. You know, I consider myself an athlete and an adventurer
mm-hmm.
with a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm doing is just sharing my story. And, I'm getting asked to do all these cool corporate functions that seem random. You name what kind of company out there and, you know, whatever convention or meetings mm-hmm. they have, that's what I'm getting asked to do. And it's really interesting.
Yeah. That's amazing. Where are you in 5 years?
Oh man, I can't even think to this afternoon. Well, the biggest thing in my life is, you know, I didn't think I was going to live to see 40. So I live my life accordingly. And I didn't set up my life for a future. And so for the first time in my life, I'm doing that. I fixed up my credit. You know, I'm saving. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a business, mm-hmm. which I've never even thought I would be the type of person to do that. And so working on taking over U.S. distribution for these crazy bikes that I ride right now. Mm-hmm. I just bought 12 of them.
Wow.
And we just bought, my girlfriend and I, we bought 12 of these bikes. And I hope that in 5 years, we are the U.S. distributors for these bikes and other cool pieces of equipment that help mm-hmm. people get out onto the trail and yeah. out experiencing nature.
I think your girlfriend deserves a little shout out. I know she's an important part of your story as mm-hmm. well. I think she sold her house. Is that right? Or something?
Her condo
mm-hmm. in order for you guys to start your business. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about her. Was she in your life prior to your accident?
Nope. No, I was injured when I was 25 and we met 2 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's life like with her? What's her name first of all?
Christina.
Okay. Yeah, what's life like with Christina?
She is the most incredible person in the world. Yeah. We don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. But yeah, she's my support system. She is what helps me get out there yeah. every day. Yeah, she's behind the scenes.
That's amazing mm-hmm. for her. And I know, according to your bio, that your favorite meal is anything she cooks.
Yeah. She's an amazing chef.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Good. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your current big ask. What's your current big ask in the world?
I can't do this on my own. Mm-hmm. We can't do this on our own anymore. I need help. I need management.
Okay.
It is getting to be too much. And I could be doing so much more mm-hmm. if I had a manager helping me book the speaking gigs, managing my public profile, mm-hmm. that type of stuff, which I'm not good at.
Yeah.
I'm not good at that. I'm good at doing what I do.
Right.
And pushing myself and getting out there and helping others get out there. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the... the self-promotion and things like that, I'm just not good at it. And we could be reaching a lot more people if mm-hmm. if I had some sort of a manager or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's your big ask at the moment.
That's what I'm looking for.
Somebody to help with your social media, your marketing, your bookings, all of that kind of stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that person
scheduling tours, events, mm-hmm. and just, I do really good with direction. This is what I tell my girlfriend. I'm like, I'm not a mind reader.
Yes.
Tell me what you want and I will do it.
Okay.
You know, uh-huh. I will go to the ends of the world and ends of the earth for you.
Right.
If I know where to go. And same thing with my profile, my business, my projects. Mm-hmm. You know, if I just had someone with the mind mm-hmm. that could tell me, be here at this time on this date.
Right.
I'll be there.
Yeah. It feels like you have an opportunity for sponsorship. Has anybody come in to endorse you or sponsor you yet?
Yeah, you know, I have sponsors, mountain bike mm-hmm. gear sponsors, mm-hmm. basically. And a few of them are monetary sponsors, so I'm still a quote-unquote pro athlete, mm-hmm. barely. But I'm there. But I think it's a time in my life to not focus on that anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not a young buck anymore. And it's been a rough couple years with injuries and surgeries and broken bones and mm-hmm. things like that. And it's time to focus on the next phase of life.
Okay.
And on my speaking career and on getting these bikes to people that need them mm-hmm. and getting them the information they need to use them safely. Mm-hmm. This is becoming my life's purpose. And I'm ready to move past being an athlete mm-hmm. and just, you know, being a being a proponent for helping people out, you know?
So the fact that people don't have these bikes who need them, where's the disconnect with that? Is it just a, is it a knowledge thing? Who do you need to connect with? Is it hospitals? Is it rehab centers? Like where, you know, where's, what's the channel for you in order to make sure that these get into the hands of the right people?
You know, manufacturing these bikes is expensive.
Okay.
And they're expensive bikes. You know, getting people the funds really is the main thing. So we help people fundraise. We help people apply for grants. We're connected with the Department of Veteran Affairs now, helping veterans get these bikes if they want them.
Feels like there's a foundation opportunity or a nonprofit opportunity.
Yeah, you know, there's organizations out there that give grants for adaptive equipment. There's plenty of those. I don't know if we need to reinvent the wheel there or start something specific or whatever, but pushing people in that direction. Now, I don't believe that. I don't want anything for free, and I don't want to give anybody anything for free either. I believe if someone wants to mountain bike, that it should cost the same as anybody else getting a mountain bike, you know? And so I really encourage people to work hard and save their money, and to an amount that's equal to what a regular mountain bike would cost. And then we'll help with the rest.
Got it.
You know?
What's that differential roughly?
I always set the standard about $5,000.
$5,000.
Like, okay. Get $5,000 your own cash together and then let's talk, you know, let's do the rest.
Yeah. And how many people in San Diego have this adaptive bike?
In San Diego?
Yeah.
Oh man, you're talking about less than a dozen.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe less than half a dozen.
Oh my gosh.
Not very many.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we need to change that, don't we?
Yes, I agree. We're working on acquiring demo bikes and starting a demo program so people can rent these bikes. And I would love to take them on a tour of PQ Canyon.
Yeah.
Not down the trail.
Not down
the helicoptered out of.
Right. Yeah. The cactus and the black widows and all of that can't be good. No, that definitely can't be good. Okay, so we need to find you a manager. We need to find you a channel for getting these bikes into the right hands, right? Or finding the right people. So we've got some work to do after you and I finish recording today.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm so inspired by you, and I'm sorry that we're going to run out of time here in a hot second, but we always end every podcast with rapid fire questions.
Okay. Cool.
So this is where you're going to start.
Lightning rounds.
Yes. So we're going to, this is where you can have lots of fun, and there's no right or wrong answer. You just, whatever comes first to your mind. Okay.
All right. Hopefully I don't say anything embarrassing.
Well, that's okay. So, so for this season of our podcast, these are the questions that we ask. Title of your lifetime movie.
Top Gun.
Okay. Good. Oh my God. They're filming the second one here, you know.
Don't tease me.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think
it's going to be so beautifully cheesy. It's going to be amazing.
Mr. Cruz, I think, has been in town. So let's go find him.
And he didn't call me.
I know. Right. Okay. If you could change places with any celebrity right this minute, who would it be?
Tom Cruise.
Filming Top Gun.
Right.
Okay. Perfect. When do you feel happiest?
When I'm in the water.
In the water. Okay. If you're running for politics, what would be your biggest campaign promise?
No more lies.
Ultimate dinner party. Which four guests do you invite and why?
Wait, say that one again.
Ultimate dinner party. Which four guests do you invite and why? And it can be living, dead, real, fictional. Doesn't matter.
Barack Obama.
Love it.
Richard Branson.
Okay.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Four.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think of four. Lawrence Taylor.
Oh.
My favorite football player growing up.
Okay.
Busted for smoking crack, though.
Oh, Lawrence. We all make choices.
One more.
Uh-huh.
Shoot. Maybe Gandhi?
Okay. I love it.
Yeah.
Think of the wisdom around that table, right? So right this minute, you have to get, I should say, another tattoo. Right? Because normally I just ask, you have to get a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get right this minute and why?
A tribal tramp stamp. Okay. I'm just kidding. I have a vision for a sleeve on my right arm of a lion, because I'm a Leo.
Okay.
Roaring to the stars in a snowstorm, and to the constellation Scorpio.
Okay.
That's my brother's a Scorpio.
All right. Good. Yeah. Okay. Biggest pet peeve?
Cigarette butts on the ground.
Oh, okay. When does your light shine the brightest?
Great question. Probably when I'm being me, which is, I'd say, when I'm in the water surfing or on the trail.
Okay, good. So I've already asked you what your big ask is, but what's your hope for the world?
That's a great question. My hope for the world, that maybe we can last it a little longer.
Yeah.
If we take care of our earth.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation, and I feel like it's just the first of hopefully many to come between you and I. So thank you for your inspiration and your wisdom today. And thank you for saying yes when I asked you to be on the podcast. Very sweet. So you're amazing. What's the best way for our listeners to reach out to you?
I hate to say it, but the best way has been my Instagram. That's kind of where I spend the most time. Mm-hmm. And what seems to be my strongest medium right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll make sure that all gets included in the show notes for you too. So
cool.
So thank you for listening to the Big Ass Podcast, and thank you for choosing to spend time with Jeremy and me. Reviews and sharing our podcast is the best way you can help a podcast grow. If you like what you heard, especially since this is one of the first 10 podcasts I've recorded, please give us a quick rating and review. To stay connected with the Big Ask Podcast, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Big Ask Podcast. Until next time, I hope you'll find your voice and put your big ask out into the world so you can create the life you want to live. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Big Ask Podcast with your host, Nicole Matthews. Be sure to stay connected to the Big Ask Podcast on Facebook and Instagram at the Big Ask Podcast. And take a minute to leave a review or rating so that we can continue to inspire our audience. Better yet, take a picture of yourself enjoying today's episode and tag us on our social media channels. Until next time, go out into the world and let today be the day you make your big ask.